first things first. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter.
Good
that
morning,
is Nick Wright.
Good morning.
This guy, what a weirdo.
Come on, man, it's Valentine's, man. It's about love.
It is Valentine's Day.
I love you guys.
Day.
Love the show. Let's get this thing started. We're sharing love to everyone today. Until we get to the A's, who are we frying first?
we're going to fly Joe Flacco in a little bit on that trade. But other news going on today. Kyler Murray's agent is calling out his critics. And we got to talk about what's happening in basketball with the state of affairs for the Lakers on this day before the All-Star break. Happy Valentine's Day. Let's get ready to do this.
We got love for you.
Lakers enter the break in 10th place in the West, 3 games out of the last playoff spot. The young guys aren't improving. The rotation isn't gelling. And as a result, many have speculated, including us here at this desk, that Luke Walton's job may be in jeopardy. But according to a report, Walton will definitely finish the season and has the full support of the team's front office. Nick, I'll start with you. What did you make of this decision when you heard about it?
So I found the report very interesting. I found the sourcing of the report interesting, and we can get into that. But my initial reaction was, well, this was the plan was to certainly give Luke Walton this year the full year, and that was without anticipating LeBron missing more time than he's ever missed due to injury, Rondo being suspended and injured, Ingram being suspended, Lonzo missing a couple stretches of time due to injury. So it's justifiable. I think it's the wrong decision. I think you had plenty of reasons to deviate from the plan, from the intangible reason, which is how much are the young players really developing? How much was that blowout loss right at the trade deadline to the Pacers, the fault of a coach's inability to tell these guys, hey, you got a job to do. This is part of being a pro athlete. That's the intangible. To the tangible, which is the haphazard, seemingly no rhyme or reason to
random
the rotations.
Rotations.
The minutes that go up and down and fluctuate. I'm old enough to remember early in the year, we're really concerned about LeBron's minutes. That went out the window right around the time you had reason to be concerned about LeBron's minutes coming off the injury. The tangible, when's the last time the Lakers ran an out-of-timeout play or an out-of-bounds play? And you're like, wow, haven't seen that one before. So I think they had plenty of reasons to deviate from the plan. It would appear they are not going to deviate from the plan. I think at the end of the year, they might look back and say, why did we want to keep Luke Walton? But it would appear they're keeping Luke Walton.
They did run a little sexy out of bounds in Atlanta. And LeBron made an unbelievable pass.
Led to a layup that was missed.
Yes. So that was, it might have been more LeBron than design. But I understand. I understand your concern. I understand your commentary and comments about Luke Walton. Because it would be hard. I think yesterday you did an amazing job of, you asked me, okay, well, prove it to me. I'm willing to have this discussion with you about Luke Walton, but give me this evidence that is going to be able to swing me because I'm willing to listen to it. I didn't really have anything for him. So I've been looking for people to be able to write stuff or be able to say stuff. And it is on the board that Luke Walton would be fired. Now, for me, I wouldn't fire him because everything that the Lakers have done since they hired Magic Johnson, it had more like a Magic Johnson, we're going to be patient type of theme to it. And Luke Walton is the only piece really that was there before Magic. So Magic didn't pick the coach yet. So ultimately, if I'm running basketball operations, if I pick Rob Pelinka, which he did, to be able to be the general manager, ultimately, we're going to have to pick a coach. And I wouldn't want to have to pick that coach during the regular season. So I'm going to let Jenny Buss have her way. It's her coach. I'm going to allow him to coach till the end of the season, given that you can't control, let's say, after Christmas Day. We're in the fourth spot. Our young players, they're developing. Ingram not at the rate we'd like. Lonzo not at the rate, but Kuzman is above what we expected.
And maybe real quick, sorry to interrupt, on Lonzo, and maybe we're seeing it over the last few weeks, we might have been underrating Lonzo's defensive impact. Because the defense, and
now
he has been developing on that track.
Now you're getting to my closing argument.
Oh, my apologies.
Because it's about the missed games. LeBron missed 18 games. How can this young team recover? And if there's another player you don't want to be hurt, it might not be just on paper. Rondo missed 34 games. Rondo's a tremendous leader. So when you have both of those guys, veterans out with championship experience out of the lineup, Ingram's missed 11 games. Lonzo missed 10 games. To me, That's the only reason outside of Magic Johnson didn't hire him. Let's make this through the regular season, postseason if we make it. Then we'll start from scratch. Well, he can hire his own coach. But when you miss that many games, it's hard to say I'm giving him a fair shake when guys aren't able to be on the basketball court.
And Nick, everything with this team has been a distraction this season. The rotations, the chemistry, the development of the young guys, LeBron being out, tampering, the trade deadline. Sure. Everything's been a distraction. Maybe this is one thing where they could just nip it in the bud and say, okay, just for the rest of the season, this won't be a distraction. Like, let's just take the whether there's going to be a new head coach or not off the table. Is there something to that? If you're looking at why you think the Lakers would think this would be the best move for the team, would that be a part of it?
Potentially, but I think the real reason is because the owner of the team likes Luke Walton. And I think the owner of the team was the one that was anonymously quoted in this article, Jeannie Buss. Because it does not make any sense. Broderick Turner is an excellent reporter. Broderick Turner is the one for the Los Angeles Times. This wasn't Woj nationally. This wasn't Zach Lowe. This was a local reporter who had one. Now, he said people close to the situation he quoted, but then he kept going back to one person, according to one person with authorization over the decision. Well, there's only three people that one person could be. Pelinka, Magic, Jeannie Buss. And if Pelinka or Magic wanted to give Luke Walton a vote of confidence, they would not do it anonymously.
Just do it publicly.
You would put your name to it. The only person who I believe would have a reason to do it anonymously is Pelinka and Magic's boss, who has publicly said, we love Luke, Luke's going to stick around, but I will leave it up to them. To me, I believe Jeannie Buss knew there was a chance that Pelinka and Magic were going to have a phone call together and call her later in the day and say, we want to move on from Luke, and she was nipping that in the bud. And she was, because she has publicly said it's up to them. But they read this news report as well, if I'm reading this correctly. And Magic calls Pelinka and said, you're not the source, are you? No. Pelinka says, you're not the source, are you? Well, who's the only other possible source? Our boss. I guess this is her way of meddling without meddling. Her way of letting us know, oh, yeah, it's still up to us. But somebody told the local newspaper he's not getting fired. And so, Jeannie Buss, this is her guy. And he is an L.A. kid, and he did play for the team when her dad was still around. There's a lot of Luke and Ingram are the only guys involved in the Lakers that predate Magic and Pelinka. And so I think this came from ownership, and the Lakers are going to have to deal with it because I think that I think Magic and Pelinka feel similarly to how I do, that maybe Brian Shaw's not the long-term answer, but he's not going to do worse over the last 25 games than Luke Walton's done.
But quickly, are you both convinced that by the season's end, they are most likely moving on, whatever they do during the season, from Luke Walton?
It depends on them making the playoffs and what going to do. Because I believe LeBron and the health of the Lakers can cure this. If they get back to where they were, let's go to December. They're the fourth seed.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why they've missed, and I believe that Lonzo defensive point, because they're the one of the worst in the NBA after week number three, January 19th. I mean, they're one of the worst in the league. So that point right there, we have to look at that. The injuries have affected these young kids. And I just believe firing Luke Walton, if these kids were in turmoil over the trades, not developing, what do you think they would be with a new coach in the building? I don't believe that would give them greater comfort. So part of their development is I'm going to stabilize it for the rest of the season.
I'm not convinced that Luke Walton won't be the coach to start next season. I would be shocked if he's the coach to end next season. And that's one of the reasons why I would have made the move now. We thought David Blatt was going to be one and done in Cleveland. And then LeBron turned on playoff LeBron. They made the finals. Can't fire him after making the finals. And you go into next season with essentially a lame duck coach who your star player doesn't love playing for, and you fire him midseason. If the Lakers are able to get to the 7 line, or if the Warriors, as you pointed out yesterday, which I think is very interesting, drop to the 2 line and the Lakers are the 8, they're the 8 seed, and they upset the 1 seed Denver Nuggets, not going to fire the coach, even if you should have fired the coach at the All-Star break, and then you're in the interim situation. It's one of the many reasons why, because I do think it's on the board, they still go on a run despite the coach. It's one of the reasons why I would have done it now.
It's a lot of ifs for a team that's 8-15 now since Christmas. Take a break. Coming up, Joe Flacco was dealt to Denver. That is next on FS1, and you can always listen to us on the Fox Sports Channel on Sirius XM. We'll be right back.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. Easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds, custom notifications for price movements, so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
But first, Knicks Sixers rookie Kevin Knox throwing down the monster slam over Ben Simmons.
Second straight night somebody does this to Ben Simmons, man. Jason Tatum, night before last, Kevin Knox. He got to eat that big fella.
Knox, after a slow start with the Knicks, man, is starting to show some of that promise coming from Kentucky. Man, backdoor cut here. What a finish.
That is outstanding.
Should have tried to take a charge.
No.
It would have been better.
No.
Cavs Nets. Somebody finally put Jared Allen on a poster. Marquese Chris with the tomahawk.
All right, let's watch this again. Marquese Chris bounced around the league. Our guy Jared Allen. Listen, this is gonna happen when you're the best dunk blocker in the league. Sometimes you can come up snake eyes. Went for it, Marquese Chris.
Oh, he got a good piece of that one.
Too much force.
The basics, though, Nick. You got to be a triple threat.
Oh, yeah.
Pump fake. Get him up. Coming down with
Chris Carter, the Tom Omansky for basketball.
Clippers and Suns. Kelly Oubre throwing down an aggressive dunk over Ivica Zubac.
Zubac actually had a pretty good game for the Clips last night. As the Clips get another win, I thought they were done trying to win. It's becoming annoying, Clippers. You traded away your best player. This is a nice little play for the Suns. One of their 11 nice plays this season.
The Suns are on our highlight reel more times than they have wins.
Yes.
That's for real.
Finally, some defense here. You don't see this often. James Harden getting shut down.
Josh Okogie goes and gets it. I mean, he basically palms it up top.
They had two amazing exchanges back-to-back where he handled Harden. Now, Harden was doing his thing.
Harden still got his 42 somehow.
Of course. They made him work for it.
And beat him, by the way, which is helpful as well. Another nice win for the Timberwolves.
All right, moving on. Big NFL news yesterday. Joe Flacco is headed to Denver in return for what's reported to be a 4th-round pick. The former Super Bowl MVP's deal goes through 2021, but has no guaranteed money left. Flacco was the odd man out in Baltimore this season when the Ravens turned to Lamar Jackson. So John Elway bringing in yet another quarterback in what has become a carousel of mediocrity at the position. CeCe, what do you make of this trade in Denver for Joe Flacco?
First, I know because a lot of the optics and commentary will be on Denver. I got to give credit to Baltimore. Baltimore, since the end of the season, let's look at what they've done. After a very good playoff run, and that defense was outstanding, the nation could finally see, man, that Baltimore, they really have a good defense. Lamar Jackson improving every snap along the way, only going to get more confidence. Removing the Super Bowl champion quarterback out of that locker room, all right, next to Lamar Jackson, removing him. So now Lamar, I talked to him at the Super Bowl, and, man, he's so excited about the offseason, getting able to work with the Ravens and their staff, their wide receivers, getting better in the passing game, realizing those things need to happen.
And not have to fight for a job.
Not have to worry about it. It is a huge relief. You can say what you want. I want to be a good teammate. Oh, yeah, it's nice to have him around. Man, get that guy out of here, man.
Right.
So I can flourish. If it's really my team, this guy has Super Bowl experience, great Super Bowl memories. These fans, he brought them a Super Bowl. Like, they're not going to forget that. So Baltimore, man, hand clap for them because they did an awesome job of giving their franchise quarterback a lot of confidence.
As for Denver?
Hey, Denver, John Elway. John Elway, I'm going to let you pick every other position on the team. And there's a lot of them.
This is insane.
I mean, we're going to keep 60 players on the roster, but John, I just need you. Leave the quarterbacks alone. Now, I do like the fact you didn't spend a high draft pick being a fourth. Okay. For a guy who can be a starter, I can understand. I like the fact doesn't have any guaranteed money. So if he gets there, you don't like him, you can cut him.
But no. This, in my opinion, this year is essentially guaranteed. You don't trade a fourth round pick to not have him on the team this
okay.
year.
Okay. But you don't have to because there is no
sure.
guaranteed money. Now, it's not a great trade, but look where they are. I thought they were a year removed from that. I thought when you sign Case Keenum, you know what you're getting. You're not shopping at Whole Foods. You're shopping at the local grocery store.
Aldi.
The produce.
Nothing wrong
the
with
produce.
Aldi, but it's Aldi.
Listen. The produce will spoil on you before. Whole Foods, you got a little more of a guarantee.
Okay.
This is Case Keenum.
Listen, you have been.
Jenna, I'm so sorry.
You didn't get much protection last year. I'm not making a case.
Hold on a second. Hold on a second. Because you've been far too diplomatic here. John Elway has made repeatedly horrific decisions at the quarterback position. Okay, he got Peyton Manning, hand clap. He drafted Brock Osweiler with Russell Wilson on the board. That was terrible. But the best thing, listen, in Brock Osweiler's defense, he's 6'8". He then tried to get Brock Osweiler $15 million a year after seeing him play, got bailed out by the Texans giving him more. He then doubled down on that by trading up for Paxton Lynch. Paxton Lynch never played any quality snaps in the NFL, but in his defense, he's 6'5". And now you trade a fourth-round pick for Joe Flacco, who has been the worst starting quarterback in the NFL for the last 5 years. But in his defense, he's 6'6". Okay, like this is, you sign Case Keenum to a deal that is sticky to get out of after 1 year. Mm-hmm. Case Keenum is exactly who Case Keenum had been every year of his career, except for the outlier year in Minnesota, and you decide that's not good enough. So here's the guy you trade. By the way, Joe, you had to rush to the market for Joe Flacco. Okay, that's this playoff run that got him his contract. That's everything since the playoff run. The years and years of starting. You, by the way, you see those numbers in yellow? The yards per pass, touchdown reception ratio, passer rating. That represents dead last in the NFL in every single category. He's terrible. And contrary to what some people would tell you, being a Super Bowl winning quarterback, it's not like a power up in a video game where in some big spot you can all of a sudden activate a magical shield. Like, well, hey, it's a big playoff game. Activate that Super Bowl winning quarterback power that you've been saving on. It does nothing for you. Steve Young's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I wouldn't want him on my team in 2019 either. This is ridiculous. It's a terrible move that you didn't have to make. And by the way, on the bright side, see, you know how many teams in the NFL will have more cap space allocated to their quarterback this year than the Denver Broncos? Only the New Orleans Saints. The Broncos will have the second most expensive quarterback room because you're paying $10 million to Case on the cap not to play, $19 million to Flacco to try to play, and whoever your backup's going to be. If I'm a Broncos fan, I'm so angry. What were they afraid of? That he's going to get cut and there's going to be a rush to give him a multi-year deal? If he's cut, what does he sign for? 1 year, $12 million, and you don't give up a pick? I don't get it.
What do you think John Elway thinks he's getting out of Joe Flacco?
A tall guy?
I think he's going to try to resurrect a deep passing game. I mean, they don't also have the type of speed at wide receiver that would say, okay, let me go out and get. If I had two or three guys, Emmanuel Sanders, I got a lot of respect for his game. He's a quality wide receiver, has been at a Pro Bowl level, but you need two or three guys with speed. Joe Flacco, what has he been known for? Throwing the ball deep down the field. So if I'm not going to put off, now they do have a good running game. That offensive line's got to get a lot better because he is getting ready to get hit in the mile high. He better get him a prescription. At them dispensaries, because he's getting ready to have some body pain. Joe Flacco is not going to be able to move in the pocket. I mean, that is the best thing about Denver is their bright young running back. How many times are they going to give him the ball next year to be able to set up Joe, play action, down the field? Because Nick didn't point this out. That is what he does best. based on what the and contrary to what that wasn't on the graph.
Well, you know what? And the thing Joe Flacco, and I'm not being smart aleck here, he does better than any quarterback in the league is drawing pass interference penalties on deep passes. That does not account in quarterback rating. You don't get credit for that. Maybe you should. The Ravens are always one of the best, or had been, at the 60-yard pass interference penalty.
And the reason why is typically he has a little more arc on the football, so the defensive backs, the timing of it is not necessarily there. They're used to the ball arriving a little early, so in drawing contact with the wide receiver, that's the comp. It's not a skill.
Right.
It's just how Joe throws, and he throws it deep.
But, Jenna, to your point, I know you were kind of joking when you brought up Case. Listen, the Broncos' two best offensive linemen got hurt last year. They traded away Demaryius Thomas. Emmanuel Sanders missed time. And Case Keenum played to his career averages across the board. If that wasn't a good enough level of play, given the circumstances, from Case, then signing Case was a travesty. Like, when you signed Case to 2 years, $36 million, with over $20 million guaranteed, it was a one-year rental, then you can't structure the contract to where it's going to be 5% of your total cap to cut him in year two.
But that's not what they thought, obviously. They thought he was the answer.
Well, clearly. I'm just going to tell you, when you're looking at Case Keenum, you have to realize that when you're looking for a quarterback. But I might sign him for a short-term deal, but I can't stop looking for a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Because he is not going to stabilize a franchise. Like, that's just unrealistic. Like, you get Case Keenum until, man, I need you to patch up my tires until I get me some new tires. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't go a long way with him. Their situation last year and the dollars they signed him for, that was a good deal by John Elway. Signing Case Keenum was the better deal, the second best quarterback deal besides Peyton Manning showing up on his doorstep.
But then keep him. Then keep him for this year because he played. Case Keenum played like Case Keenum. Don't allocate more of your cap and a fourth round pick for Joe Flacco. I don't
cover a patch with another patch.
Since they won the Super Bowl, he has been, by every statistical category, the worst starting quarterback in football. There's no denying it. I don't get it.
He's tall. You know
he's
what tall. John Elway's doing? He just wants to make sure that he is the greatest Broncos quarterback that ever lived.
He's got that covered.
He definitely has it covered, seemingly. Coming up, is Paul George now the front runner for MVP? We'll tell you who thinks so. Next on First Things First. Speed Week continues today with the Gander RV Duel at Daytona as drivers battle for the starting position in the Daytona 500. Coverage begins at 5:30 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. It is that time for us to go viral. Last night, Joel Embiid and the Sixers were here in New York to face the Knicks. Embiid posted 26 points, 14 rebounds, but it was this moment that had the internet abuzz. Joel going after a loose ball almost hits Regina King.
Oh!
Yes, the same Regina King who's up for an Oscar. After the game, she tweeted, "Thank you, God and Joel Embiid, for your athletic abilities. Crisis averted." With the praying hands emoji.
Yeah, I mean, it took some athleticism to not really injure some people there, Joel.
Oh, yeah, she's lucky she didn't pay for that whole thing of hair. No, thank goodness she only had a little bit of weave up in there, because if her ponytail would have been that much longer, she would have caught one of those size 18s. Oh, man, he just missed it. The ponytail.
It's so embarrassing.
You know, because there's a different length to it,
understand.
You know?
Yeah.
I bought a lot of hair in my day, bro. I know this.
My man Chris
Carter, I didn't put some money down on hair. I know these things. Mm-hmm. Joel Embiid saw that. He's been here in America enough. He knows.
He saw that. Yeah. Been here in America.
You see, he jumped over the woman and landed right in the guy's lap. Mm-hmm.
Protect the weave.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, when you go there and you're selecting hair, sometimes
24
don't
inches,
get
36 inches.
Holla, holla.
I've bought
Nick
some hair
Wright
in my life, too.
There we go. Full confession. That's what I want. What, Nick Wright? I done bought some hair in my day.
It's a true story.
Doo-doo.
All right. Well, while we're all enjoying the moment, I'm going to move on with stories to start your morning. The Warriors.
I'm going to get Freddie to introduce you to some.
To the weed.
Absolutely. We're going to have you a couple ponytails next week.
Okay. All right. I'm on board.
Who'd they
lose
to, Jenna?
The Warriors fell to the Blazers. It wasn't pretty. 129-107. But the headline out of this, Steve Kerr, his ejection. Golden State's head coach was tossed after slamming the clipboard protesting a flagrant foul call on Draymond Green with under 4 minutes to go. Nick, what'd you think?
Listen, tough loss for the Warriors. The Blazers got 8 points on the possession in question here. It was a terrible flagrant foul call on Draymond Green, but I give Steve Kerr credit. I think he knew that Draymond was going to explode, so he did it
preemptively. He said, if I lose my mind, Draymond's not going to.
Right.
And you'd rather Kerr get ejected than Draymond potentially get suspended.
And there's a couple times during the year.
Yeah.
If you're coaching Golden State, you need a couple of these. It's like I tell the kids I'm coming into the locker room. Now, I don't want y'all to sit too close to the chalkboard because I'm getting ready to throw a chair. Sometimes you need that, especially extra motivation for this Warriors team. They were trying to win this game, though. Yep. Trailblazers played well.
Yeah, terrible fourth quarter for Golden State.
Moving
terrible.
On, the Celtics beat the Pistons 118-110 behind a balanced scoring attack. Six different Celtics scored in double digits. None of them reached 20 points. Boston is now 9-2 without Kyrie Irving. See, what do you make of that?
Man, you never like to think, because I'm a guy about talent. The more talented guys you have there, the better your chances are winning. But there are some instances that, man, whatever you see does not appear to be real.
Okay.
And without Kyrie Irving, who is their best player, they play better team basketball when he's injured. That's all. I can't explain it no better than that.
It's so odd because all the metrics say they're so much better with him on the court than off the court. He's having his best season of his career. He's distributing the ball more this season than any year of his career.
And if I was one of the teams in the East, I would rather play them.
Without him,
yes.
Of course. But 9-2, it's a small sample, but it's not a tiny sample size. So it is something. It's something at least to note.
This is the biggest problem.
Something to note.
The run they went on last year in the playoffs without him.
Kyrie.
Right.
And this year, they're better.
All right, to the big news out of the NFL now. The Broncos are trading for Joe Flacco, which means Case Keenum is the odd man out. Denver reportedly shopping their big free agent acquisition from last offseason. CC, can Case Keenum help a team in need of a quarterback?
Well, let's look at the teams that might need a quarterback. Jacksonville. Could he actually help Jacksonville? Like, let's not change the narrative on who Case Keenum is. No, he's not the guy that's going to put a team over the top. Like, listen, he is someone that, I can't afford that Mercedes. Let me get me something else that's going to be a reliable for about 12 months.
An Acura.
Acura's more reliable than him.
Yeah.
I said 12 months.
I'd say he's a nice under warranty Ford Fiesta. Listen, you know what team could really use Case Keenum? A team that has an overrated, aging, expensive quarterback, the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos, he's getting replaced by the over. Listen, I think Case is better than Flacco, and he's lost his job to Flacco. I think Case is probably about the 28th. Best starting quarterback in football. There's 32 teams. The problem is a bunch of those teams, guys he's better than, are young guys that teams want to give a chance to. Like, right, and so he's probably going to be a backup.
Yeah, neither one of them better than Cap.
Gosh, but no.
Wait, I'm throwing a name out there, the Giants with Pat Shurmur.
Man, stop.
I'm throwing something else out there. Jenna Wolf, a little pocket shame and saying, what's wrong with an Acura, Jenna?
How long have you had money?
Exactly, you mocking that?
Okay, no. Mm-hmm. Finally, could two of the best wide receivers in football be on the move? We know Antonio Brown has asked for a trade from the Steelers. When asked to make a bold prediction, Fox's Jay Glazer said that the Giants would deal Odell Beckham Jr. this offseason. Nick, we know it was just a prediction from Glazer, but if both were available via trade, which of these wideouts would you rather have, A.B. or Odell?
Odell, even though A.B.'s been more productive. Odell is younger. Odell, I do not believe, is a locker room issue the way Antonio is. Now, he might be a distraction issue. Mm-hmm. He might pop off at the mouth sitting next to a high out of his mind Lil Wayne once a year. He might put some odd things on the gram. But we have talked to Snacks Harrison. We have talked to Saquon Barkley. Every Giant player we've talked to has said, man, I love Odell Beckham. Like that he is within those, for a lot of those guys, he's a good friend and teammate. And I think his talent level is undeniable. Now, the injury concern, all of a sudden, he's one more injury away, I would say, from being an injury risk, right? His rookie year, he had the sprained ankle, made him miss time. 2 years ago, he broke his leg. And then last year, he missed time at the end of the year. So I don't think it's a trend yet, but it could become one. But Antonio, because of how volatile he's become within the team and outside of the team with some of the potential legal issues, I would rather have Odell Beckham now and moving forward than Antonio.
And we have to be able to grant Odell the type of time and a number of different mistakes that AB has made there. I mean, they're not the same age. It's not the same comparison. AB has been more productive. He's also had a lot better quarterback, also had a lot better offense that he played in, actually knew what they were doing, went on the field with a plan of what they were going to do. So
stability and coaching.
Yeah, so I don't think that trying to compare them and their numbers is the right thing to do. If we're on the football field, Odell can do more. I think Odell is a smarter football player. Now, AB is just productive, and he's been in that system. He's mastered that system. So at this point, I would much rather have Odell, but realizing that Odell might show up one day and be like, I don't want to be here either. That's the state of both of these wide receivers. So I can understand why Jay Glazer, I wouldn't be surprised if Odell didn't play his whole career in New York. I talked to Odell at the Super Bowl, had a couple long conversations with him. So Odell is still growing as a young person and being in New York City. I know people talk about it a lot, but most of those people have never played in New York City. So I'm not going to say Odell doesn't want to play in New York, but the world is open. And when you have a home in Los Angeles in the offseason, I'm just sure it would have a certain pull on you and continue to pull on you. And I just believe that Odell will have that type of interest in other teams.
Flirtation, yeah.
Yes.
And when both the L.A. teams are really good. Both the L.A. teams were 12-plus win teams this year. Yesterday when we were talking about Antonio, you were very angry with Antonio. You want him shipped to Buffalo as some punitive measure. In an odd way, I think where Antonio gets traded to could have an impact on Odell's disposition. And by that, I mean this. If Antonio gets traded to a great situation in a great city with a good quarterback and is rewarded for this, then Odell might look at it and say, man, sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the exact grease they want.
Mm-hmm.
And if Antonio's traded to Buffalo or a situation similar, Jacksonville, Odell might look at it and say, okay, the Giants might not be perfect, and Eli might not be my ideal quarterback, but it sure as hell could get worse. And so I do think it'll be instructive as to where Antonio, if Antonio is rewarded for what's happened this year, or if he's penalized, and whether or not that has a trickle-down effect on Odell's disposition moving forward with the Giants.
And I wouldn't be surprised if New England looked at trading for a wide receiver, one in particular, AB. I wouldn't be surprised with them having the 32nd pick in the first round, and he's already got three more years. That's a perfect contract for them. And his agent, you can't strong-arm New England.
No.
You have to come to work unless he said, I'm not going to play anymore. And so playing with Tom Brady for the next year or two, that could be very, very appealing.
If the Patriots turn the 32nd pick of the draft into a year of Brandon Cooks on a cheap contract, and then turn that into the 23rd pick of the draft, and then the next year turn the 32nd pick of the draft into Odell Beckham, they are just playing three-dimensional chess while everyone else is playing Connect Four. Like, if that's how this turns out,
I don't think Odell.
Antonio. I misspoke. Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. I misspoke.
Can I just say for the record, I enjoy Buffalo
very much. No,
Jenna, weather is a little cold, but I really like Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I love the organization.
Okay, that's
great. I spent many winters up at Rich Stadium when it was Rich
Stadium. Let's get back to the NBA, Jenna.
Back to the NBA. Now, Paul George is having an incredible season for the Thunder, most recently dropping back-to-back 40-point games against the Rockets and the Blazers. His success has boosted the conversation around his MVP chances, and his teammate Russell Westbrook got in on the chatter, saying that Paul George is his front runner for MVP. Nick, is Russ right?
Well, Russ is right that he's his front runner. He's supposed to be his front runner. He's his teammate. But no, he's not the front runner. But he has made this was a one-man race for a bit for Harden, I would say, in the month of December. Giannis, in January, made it a two-man race. And Paul George is en route to making the three-man race. I mean, I talked to Antonio Daniels last night, who works with the Thunder and the Pelicans, actually. He made the case that he thinks Paul George is above Harden but right behind Giannis. I think what I do think is going to happen is as people get tired of talking about Harden's streak, which got extended last night, but people don't care anymore. Like, it's old news at this point. Just like Russell Westbrook won an MVP for averaging a triple-double. He's now done it back-to-back years since then.
Right.
Nobody cares anymore. People are going to start to focus more, and maybe rightfully so, on the two-way part of this discussion. People are going to focus on the team wins and the defensive numbers. And those,
elevate Paul George. Now, they also elevate Giannis, but they elevate Paul George and they put Harden in a clear third. Now, I don't think Harden is third. I think Giannis and Harden are the top two. But Paul George, career high in points, career high in rebounds, career high in assists per game, career high in three-point percentage. He is having his career year. Mm-hmm. And so, and the team is winning at a very high level. And none of those mention his defensive impact, which is elite. So, yeah, if it's a three-man race, he's there. But he's not the leader at the moment.
So let me ask you this. What if the Thunder finished with the best record in the West? Then would now, you consider Paul George a little more?
Well, the thing which about is on the, it is on that, the board. That Nick yeah. talked about this race, the three-horse race that we have. If that was to happen, that means these last 26 games, they would be playing amazing basketball. So there's enough games left in the schedule, a third of the season, that, yes, Paul George could overtake him. But those defensive things will have to be baked in there. And I think Nick makes a great point because we've seen this happen before. One guy is having an outstanding season. By the time we get to when it's the really MVP, you get tired of having the conversation. So there becomes some type of fatigue over that person who happens to be the front runner. But when you look at OKC, what they're doing, 37 wins at the All-Star break, that's outstanding. So we also have to give him credit for helping OKC be one of the top teams. If they were the number one seed in the West, he continues since January 19th, averaging 36 a game, 49% from the field. Like, those are amazing numbers. And what he's doing on the defensive end, first in steals, second in deflections, and the way he plays, like, I believe he's going to be right there in the conversation. But if they were to finish ahead of Golden State, number one in the West, yeah. Paul George would be, man, the dark horse. He would win the MVP.
If they get all the way to the one seed, I think he could get all the way to the one spot in the MVP. I also think he's got a real shot at Defensive Player of the Year this year. You've talked about it, how given LeBron's time missed, he is staring at first-team All-NBA as a forward, something mm-hmm. that there's only been one spot open for the last decade-plus because of LeBron. It looked like he and Giannis. But I just want to remind the audience a bit on the arc of Paul George's career, because I'm glad we finally got to a place that it looked like we were destined to get to. Back in 2014, Miami Heat are defending champs, mm-hmm. and they're playing for the second straight year the Indiana Pacers in the conference finals. Game five, elimination game for the Pacers. Paul George goes eye-to-eye with LeBron James, throws up a 36-6-2-6. He had just turned 24 years old. And that was the game where LeBron dapped him up at midcourt after a end-of-quarter mm-hmm. shot. Now, they ended up losing the next game. The Heat go on to the NBA Finals. We thought, okay, Paul George is the next superstar. A few weeks later, he shattered his leg. And then we thought, okay, what will it do to his career? And now he's gotten to the place it looked like he was going to get to at 25. Now he's gotten to the place it looked like he was going to get to in 2015 sure. when he missed that full year. I'm so happy for him.
Yeah.
And he has been so validated in his decision to stay.
Yes.
And Russ has been so validated in his putting his arms around him and taking a back seat that he deserves to be in this level of discussion. Giannis and Harden, just to me, are still having better years.
And that's the reason why Russ should be saying things like that about Paul George.
Right.
And you make a good point, if they were able to get, because that question hadn't been posed to me. Man, I haven't heard anyone talk about that. Well, what if OKC finishes number one? Then he would have to be in that consideration. And right now, as I stated a couple days ago, he's the best two-way player in basketball. He's going to be first-team All-NBA. LeBron's not going to make it. All right? He's getting ready to take that spot. Not because LeBron's having a bad year. It's because he's having a spectacular year. Not Klay. Not Kawhi. All right? Right. Paul George.
Not KD.
Absolutely. Not KD.
We went through a stretch this season where we weren't talking about the Thunder. We were talking about everyone else mm-hmm. except for the Thunder. And slowly they've crept up to become a very competitive team. How far do you think this team can go with Russ and PG playing the way they're playing? Well, obviously Paul George.
Listen, more. I shouldn't say obviously. I believe that they, like every team in the West, their ceiling is when you meet Golden State in the playoffs, but that means the conference finals. Like right now, they're 3.5 back of the one seed. They're, I think, a game and a half back of Denver. Whether they catch Denver or not, could they beat Denver in the second round? Of course they could. Like, you know what I mean? Could they put a scare into Golden State? Potentially, yes. Now, I don't think anybody's beaten Golden State. But let's just, if you're asking me, if they were to make the finals,
Could they beat whoever comes out of the East? Yes, they could. I just think Golden State's too tough.
Jen, I need you to look into your crystal ball and tell me, how's Russ going to play? Because Paul George is the best player they have on the team. Russ knows that. How is Russ going to play, and how does he shoot the ball and shoot the ball behind the arc? Because if he shoots a decent percentage, man, they can beat everyone except the Warriors.
And if the consolation for this year is a top three MVP finish, defensive player of the year, and first team All-NBA, I mean, that is the top of the resume line individual season for 98% of the guys.
Off of the season where I decided not to be a free agent and stay in OKC.
Absolutely right.
I have so many questions for the crystal ball, but I'll get yours in there at some point. I like hours and hours
of questioning. Sure, sounds great.
Coming up, are the Lakers making the right call sticking with Luke Walton? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, now joined by our favorite Valentine's Day guest, Super Bowl champ Chris Canty.
That's what I'm talking about. I like that, Jen.
Yeah,
but check it out, because on Valentine's, man, my perfect gift, big box of chocolates. Let's do
this. There you go. I see you, man. I see you.
What were you about to say, Jen?
She was getting ready to say that.
I'm sure.
A box of chocolates.
My God, I really hope Jenna Wolf was not about to call Chris Canty a big box of chocolates.
Holla, holla.
I was going to say, we think Chris Canty.
Oh, we do.
But your
absolutely.
Box of chocolate thing.
Yeah.
The most debated quarterback coming out of the draft next year will be Kyler Murray. Murray announced he was choosing football over baseball last week. Despite his rising draft stock, many have doubted his ability to thrive due to his diminutive stature. His new agent, Eric Burkhardt, had a message for those doubters yesterday.
Kyler is not some little shrimp they're making him out to be. I see people have him at 178, 180 pounds. This kid weighs 205 yesterday. This kid is jacked the F up. These days and age of these old NFL dinosaurs and scouts that sit back and talk about what players can't do. Oh, he can't do that. He's not this. He's not that. Those are the losers. I mean, sorry, that's what it is. If you want all your requirements and all of that, that's not what the NFL game is today.
All right. Who is he comparing him to? Maybe the Paxton Lynches and the Joe Flaccos and all those tall guys that didn't quite work out there in Denver. Chris Canty, what do you make of what Kyler's agent had to say?
Well, I think Kyler's agent is doing what an agent does. An agent is basically a glorified salesman. He's trying to sell him to the fan bases of prospective teams that are thinking about drafting him, but he's also trying to explain why the criticism of Kyler Murray is not fair. And I completely agree with him. I mean, in terms of the way we look at the prototype for the quarterback position, I think we got to adjust that a little bit, CeCe. Based on how the rules are now in today's game, all of it slanting toward the offense, particularly protecting the quarterback, whether he's in the pocket or outside the pocket. I mean, we've seen quarterbacks that are more slight in stature have success. I mean, two of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL are right around 6 feet tall, that being Drew Brees and Russell Wilson.
Yes.
We saw Baker Mayfield had an outstanding rookie season, breaking the rookie touchdown passing record. He's coming from the same offense that Kyler Murray is coming out of, Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. If you look at Baker Mayfield's last season in college in comparison to what Kyler Murray did last year, I mean, the numbers are really similar. I mean, if you were going to say one quarterback had the edge, you would probably give it to Kyler Murray, just what he added in the ground game. So I look at this and say you have to rethink the conventional norms regarding the quarterback position just based on today's rules. And when I looked at the tape for Kyler Murray, I see a productive football player. I don't just see an athlete playing quarterback. I see a quarterback that happens to be an athlete.
And that comes from a guy who made his living in the trenches as a, how tall are you, Ken?
6'8".
6'8", playing defensive tackle. So if there was going to be a guy against him, it would be a guy like Chris Canty. I played in the trenches. He's not going to be able to throw it around me. He's not going to be able to do certain things within the pocket. So for me, that's a tremendous endorsement.
CeCe, and to add to your point, the quarterback in the NFL that led in batted passes rate last season just happened to be the quarterback that got traded to Denver, Joe Flacco. How tall is he?
6'6".
Exactly. So, I mean, there is no correlation between quarterback's height and batted passes. I think that's one of those myths that we have to dispel.
Oh, okay, hold on. I disagree with that last point. There is a correlation. Just because Joe Flacco is bad enough to or he can't take advantage of his height doesn't mean shorter quarterbacks aren't more likely to have passes batted at the line of scrimmage. I'm not saying it's a one-to-one. It's not a direct correlation like that. But you are more likely to struggle throwing over your offensive lineman and the defensive lineman's hands raised the shorter you are. Additionally, you are going to have to throw with more anticipation because there are going to be more blind spots when a receiver's coming across the field that you simply can't see. I respect what the agent is doing, and I agree with you entirely. This is good agenting.
And you,
great agenting,
and he's saying he weighed 205. Listen, you know why I said he weighed 195? Because that's what the University of Oklahoma told me. You know why I said he's under 5'10"? Because that's what the University of Oklahoma told me. And while he can gain weight between college and the pros, he ain't going to gain height, except for the hair, and that doesn't count. So this he would be, this is a fact, not an opinion. If he's successful, he would be the shortest successful quarterback in NFL history. I just need to see it first. For me to be willing to spend, forget a first-round pick, a top 10 pick is how we're talking about him? A top 5 pick maybe? The discussion was, could he go 1 overall? I can't use that type of pick on someone who would be the first person to ever do something. And so, I like I said before, I am rooting for him, and I thought he was an electrifying college player. I've never seen it translate in the NFL.
What pick was Johnny Manziel?
Johnny Manziel was in the 20s.
22nd, I believe.
Okay. Now, Johnny Manziel, the only thing stopped Johnny was his personality from playing in the league.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing. If he didn't have the struggles off the field, Johnny Manziel would be having an NFL career. I believe Kyler's a better football player than him. I don't think the agent's doing a good job. He mentioned the weight and everything. No, he needs to stop talking. He needs to shut up because we got a job to do. And we're going to criticize every college player because our job, once they stop, when they finish the national championship, the bowl series, when they finish their last game, our job is to tell people what they can do and what they can't do. And you seem to be fine with that when we told people about Johnny Manziel and we hyped Johnny Manziel up where he shouldn't have been in the first round. He should have been a second round pick with the character flaws, the bad things that he did off the field, the lack of being dependable, all the things that he did, the elitism that he
exhibited.
The privilege that he was expecting when he came into pro football, he shouldn't have been a first round pick. But when you represented him and we said good things about him and he was short and Kyler does have a better body, he's a little bit shorter than Johnny Manziel and has a better throwing motion than Johnny Manziel. He throws more over the top and has better anticipation than Johnny Manziel, and he doesn't have all these things off the field. So for me, he is a first round pick. And if the agent just shuts up and let us do our job, because that is our job to be able to pick apart all these players and tell you what they did in college and what will not transfer and what will transfer to the NFL game. And I do believe he will be a starting quarterback because eventually someone is going to be able to do it. And if they hadn't changed the rules, I would be like, yeah, I need to see someone do it. But I believe he is the guy.
Yeah, CC, and to your point, I think the timing hasn't never been more right for a quarterback of this stature to be able to come into the league and have success. And Nick, I know you pushed back a little bit on the point I tried to make about a quarterback's height and the batted passes, but if you look at the quarterbacks that are coming out this year that in the top couple of rounds, mm-hmm. guys that are being considered a first or second round pick, I mean, last season, Daniel Jones, who's 6'5", had 12 batted passes. Drew Locke, who's 6'4", had 8 batted passes. Kyler Murray was tied with Dwayne Haskins for 5 batted passes, and Dwayne Haskins is 6'3". So, I mean, there's something to the kid's game, whether it's him being able to use creative arm angles or being able to find windows within the pocket to deliver the ball down the field.
And
there's something to it.
The best offensive line in football last year, in college football.
Yeah, okay, and that's an NFL
offensive line
in terms of size. So, I mean, when you look at all of those different factors, it's not like Kyler Murray is just dealing with this height now. He's been this height his entire life. So if he's been able to overcome it and play at a high level in college football and get the Heisman, I would like to believe that the kid would be able to adjust once we get to the pro level and overcome whatever deficiencies that his height might present for
him. Also, it seems like we come out here every day, we keep making either an excuse for him or, you know, pumping him up to say that he's going to make it and be successful. It doesn't seem like his draft stock is falling. It seems like teams are very interested. Maybe the Giants made a comment that they did.
Yeah, he'll be all right if his agent just beats quiet.
If his agent stopped talking about his height.
That's what the agent needed to do right there.
It says stop talking is what it says.
Chris hands it to
various people
throughout the course of the show.
So I'm going to take that advice. Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on the show. Coming up, are the Lakers making the right call? Sticking with Luke Walton next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're joined by FS1 basketball analyst, the lovely Sarah Kustak. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, great to see you guys.
Color-wise, appropriately dressed for the lovely holiday.
Happy Valentine's Day. Two of us are on the Valentine's road.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We, of course.
I'm going purple today.
Listen, there are a lot of
I love that tie.
A lot of single people in the world, and on behalf of them, I'm not, but I'm wearing the
color. Single people in the world. And she circles herself.
Color-wise.
And said earlier in the show, wife's out of town.
Anyway.
All you single people out there wearing blue for y'all. You're by yourself. I'm not by myself, but I'm wearing blue for you.
What are you doing?
Not much. Let's talk about the Lakers who enter. I got the don't talk card. They enter the All-Star break in 10th place in the West, 3 games out of the last playoff spot. The young guys aren't improving. The rotation isn't gelling, and as a result, a number of people have speculated, including us at this desk, that Luke Walton's job may be in jeopardy. But according to a report, Walton will definitely finish the season and has the full support of the team's front office. Sarah, bail me out here. What do you make of this decision?
I like the decision, and I understand that the narrative since the start of the season is the fact that Luke Walton is not Magic Johnson or Rob Pelinka's guy. So that has always been a topic of discussion when Luke Walton is brought up in the success of this team. It's not Luke Walton's fault that Rajon Rondo got injured, that Lonzo Ball got injured, that LeBron James. I mean, this is a Lakers team that was fourth in the Western Conference before LeBron James got hurt. So when you look at the rotation, when you look at some of the inconsistencies, that's a big part of it. And speaking of the roster, Luke Walton didn't put together this roster. And so there are a variety of things that I understand the argument. I understand you look at that loss against Atlanta, the poor body language, the way in which the team didn't seem to have the right approach going into the All-Star break, as you would expect, and given where they are in the standings. But I think Luke Walton is the guy that you let finish out this season. And if you want to make some decisions, reevaluate things after the year. But right now, I like the fact that we'll see what happens, but that they are staying with him.
Sarah, I agree with you. I think that they should stay through the season. I just think even if you think that Luke is not a good X's and O's coach, if you think that he's not the right guy to develop the young talent, all those things I'd be like, okay, I'm willing to accept those things. But if I'm not a good coach, how do I put together a game plan for 56 games where LeBron James out 18? Rondo, who I didn't sign him, they signed him, so I got to come up with a game plan. He misses 34 games. Lonzo Ball, still developing. He misses another 10 games. Ingram, who's still developing. I need him to develop more than any of the other players. He misses 11 games. So how do I come up with a game plan night in and night out where in the NBA there's not a lot of practice? So how do I come up with something to be able to win games? I believe they've done almost the best that they can do. Now, the optics at the end, that really hurt them. When LeBron was out, how they couldn't close out games. He didn't come up with the style. The younger players not developing. All those things, man, will get you fired in the NBA. With LeBron being there, though, let's put out some patience. Because that's what LeBron said when he signed. It's not about all this year. Okay. Well, it's not about all this year. Let's get through this year. Let's try to be healthy for these last 25 games. And I believe that that would be a fair judge of Luke Walton as a head coach. I give him 1 year with LeBron James, and I don't give him any more than that.
And I also think you look at the fact that this team went through, this is the first time many of these young players are contending for the playoffs, that have expectations of winning, of getting to the postseason, and their names are all on the trading block. You know, when you're going to the trade deadline, I think that was an emotional thing. And I know Magic said, you're professionals, you're men, get ready and turn around. And,
no, but age doesn't make you a man, though.
I think that's easier said than done. They had never been through it before, and I think that takes a toll.
And maybe the little tidbit, too, where not only are they part of the trade, man, their names were released. When it said, man, we're getting ready to clean house to be able to get AD, Nick, you pointed that out all the time, how hard that could be for a young player trying to transition with LeBron James and having your name in the paper, reporters ask you every day. That's a tough transition for a young player. Besides, I just need to grow my game and continue
it's
to develop.
It's incredibly difficult. And you know whose number one job it is to help work them through that? The head coach of the team. And you know his number one job it is to make sure that when your best player is out, you at the very least do not lose at home to the Knicks and at home to the Cavs, the head coach of the team. And you know whose job it is the day before the trade deadline when you're playing a Pacers team without its best player to at the very least make sure these guys give them whatever you need to give them to make it clear, hey, this might be your last game with the Lakers. I know you guys are worried about that. Find a way to have your last game with the Lakers be a positive.
I have to give you a little resistance. That's not the coach's job. When you're on the trading block and people have announced your name, it is not the coach's job in the NBA to get you focused every game. It is the general manager and Magic Johnson's job. When you're to that point, you need some help from the front office. So I got to be able to take Luke. That is not Luke's fault.
Here's why I think pre-trade deadline, I would say it's the coach's job. It is very difficult for Pelinka or Magic, who would be the ones trading them away, to come in that room and say, guys, we still love you. Luke has the credibility to say, guys, I'd keep all of you if it was up to me. Let's as long as we're together, let's stay together. But let's just assume for a moment none of this is Luke's fault, that Luke is actually an average or above average coach, that it's the injuries, it's the roster construction, all of it. I would go back to last year. What was the single biggest thing the Cavs acquired at the trade deadline? It was not George Hill, was not Rodney Hood, it wasn't Jordan Clarkson. It was a re-engaged, reinvigorated LeBron James. And you didn't make any moves at the deadline. And if sometimes there's got to be a casualty. And if I don't think Luke Walton is such an asset that you can't risk him being the casualty if what it gets you is playoff LeBron 6 weeks early.
Yeah,
I don't think that's what they need.
Even though if it might get LeBron, it's not going to get those younger players. Like, how many people in the organization can they really trust? You said, okay, Rob Pelinka's trying to trade him. Magic Johnson's trying to trade him. You said that. Okay, so now you're getting ready to fire the guy who was in there telling him, hey, man, I wish I could keep you guys. Who do they trust? Man, those first 3 years in your career professionally, man, are tough. Like, my age might be 21, but, man, inside, I'm like 17. I've been playing AAU basketball. I played 1 year of college, if that, and I'm not ready for this professional life. They've turned this organization over to LeBron James. So, man, what these young players are going through, it's real. And you can see they're not at their best. They're not developing. Outside of Kuz, they are not developing at the type of rate that you would want young players. And to me, that's the biggest indictment against Luke. The younger players aren't developing.
Well, and I also think there's been no real backing of Luke Walton. So for these younger players, they're wondering, do I really need to respect you in the same type of way? Do I really need to take everything that you say, with the same amount of engagement? Because they know that Magic and Pelinka may not be sold on Luke Walton. So I think it goes two ways in terms of Walton giving them the same type of encouragement, the love, all of that. But I also think it's the flip side of things of they don't know if they're going to be here next year. They also don't know if Luke's going to be here next year.
If you go in that locker room and tell them, you know something, the front office wants to trade you, but I want to keep you. You know what you tell that young player? Man, I ain't got no say around here. So you talking about losing them. That right there could be the fatal thing to be able to lose them. Oh, man, I want to keep you and everything. They don't think highly of you. I think highly of you, but I ain't got no say. So be careful in Luke Walton. This is Pelinka and Magic Johnson. They need to have some responsibility in this.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.